The quintessential Allman Brothers song, Whipping Post, first released in 1969. We're talking about the secret life of mob boss Ralph Natale with Ralph and with Dan Pearson. By the late 1990s, Ralph had already done two stretches in prison, but came back, rose to be the boss of the Philadelphia family, restored its stature, but he was infiltrated by rats. It was under constant surveillance. The FBI was coming. In a moment, we'll talk about that period and also ask Ralph what he knows about Jimmy Hoffa. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Dan Pearson, can I ask you, is this a movie in the works? Because this is certainly a colorful and interesting story.
Well, that's a great question. We have two different offers in the works. One is from a television standpoint as a series, and the other is as a feature. So we're in talks on both as we speak.
Yeah, it might be a better series. You need to tell a lot of stuff. It's hard to cram that into one movie.
That is the conundrum we're dealing with right now. But decisions being made very shortly. It is when you peel back this thing with Ralph, things aren't what they always seemed, and then when you find out what they really are, it's shocking. But then you really look at it, you see this is the norm. And when Ralph tells the story of him and Tip O'Neill, or the treachery of Nicky Scarfo killing his best friend's son.
That's right.
Or Ralph was in Lewisburg watching this conspiracy to kill Castellano. Well, Ralph can tell you these stories better than I can. But all I am is a vessel of his stories.
Hey, Ralph, let me ask you this. You know, in the movie The Goodfellas, they have a special section in the prison for the wise guys. And it sounds like that's what the glass house was. It was for wise guys. Did you have a certain amount of freedom in there to run your own affairs?
Well, in Miami we did, but in Lewisburg they exaggerated. They never had that kind of
freedom.
Freedom. We lived on in Lewisburg when I first went there. My cell was already picked out for me by Phil Restelli, who was the boss at that time, he was away, of the Bonanno family. And that block was J Block. And in the magazine, I forget what magazine it was, they labeled it the Mafia Block. That's where all the guys that were made men, bosses, captains, or whatever, were and were kept. And I had a great single cell there as soon as I came there. And in Lewisburg, it was by class. You walked with certain people, you talked to certain people. It was a dangerous, dangerous penitentiary too, by the way. Very dangerous. And you had to know where you were and who you were with, and that's what happened over there. In Goodfellas, they exaggerated quite some different things. They cooked it. That's why sometimes when I watch it, it's entertaining. It's appealing for an hour and a half, to but it's a lot of bullshit. It's just like it's like when we used to go up to the visiting room and talk about Paul Castellano. Down to Mickey Paradiso. Mickey Paradiso was one of the skippers that were in prison. Tough guy. Good guy. Good guy, tough guy, this and that there. He had a visit, and I had a visit with my wife and family at the same time. It was a gigantic visiting room upstairs. And we had two hacks at the one end and two hacks at the other. And they watched what was going on, and all the guys. But they allowed, you could go visit between one visitor. You could walk over and say hello to his friends and his family. In the visiting room, Mickey had a visit. And there was three or four, four of them, and they're sitting there and they're talking. And then I walked over, said hello to them, and he introduced me. They're guys from New York, and talking to them, laughing, thing, and they're putting their heads close together. I said, something's going on. Something's going to come down. Because they had to have his okay also, that all the skippers at that time were voting secretly they're going to kill Paul Castellano. And he didn't say nothing to me. They come down, we come down a bit, we talk and this and that there. So sooner or later, the killing of Castellano happens. I was sitting upstairs in the rec room where they had the TV, and the TV only would do one thing, one for news and one for sports. So I was sitting with a friend from New York, and we're sitting, we're watching the news. All at once, it's a blast. Paul Castellano killed in front of Sparks Steakhouse. I said, my God, they did it. I said, let me go downstairs, because we couldn't go from, he lived on the second floor, but you shared the rec area there, the third tier, the second tier, and the first. I lived on the first floor. I said, I'm going downstairs, and he told Mickey. I went downstairs, called Mickey. I said, Mickey, come down myself. Yeah, Rob, what is it? I said, they killed Paul. He didn't say, Mike, I got to get on the phone. He went right to the phone. And that's when I knew. And I said, I still have that good feeling. I know something's coming down.
And John Gotti is the guy who took over for Castellano then, right?
Yes. Well, he's almost as bad as Scarfo. Almost as bad. Because he was a guy that destroyed his own family. Just like Mickey Scarfo destroyed our family. When he made all his men down in South Philadelphia lure Salvi Testa in to settle a dispute between two maid guys. And they took him in a candy store. And while he was talking, Wayne Grandy got behind him and shot him and killed him in his head. He killed the son of the man that put up and always defended him when any beefs came when Ange was living.
So Angelo Bruno was killed, a shotgun to the head. Then his replacement, the Chicken Man, was blown up with a bomb. And then there was a period where all kinds of people were getting killed. It's like a bloodbath there. I mean, there was a...
Well, they didn't know who to blame and this and that. They were doing everything. But as far as John Stanford, he was a phony. Nobody sent him to be a boss. As John Gotti said no and yes to everybody. He was never a boss because... To be a boss, you have to have the commission to give the okay. You don't just become a boss. When the commission in New York says okay, then you're a full boss. And John Sanford never got no okay from, because the new commission, after the commission, you can recall when they sent all the commission away for 100 years, all the old men, including my friend Frank Rosselli, when they sent those people away, they put all the new guys in. Then one of the new guys was John Gotti included. You know, all of them. They're all going to go away. He came to Danbury when I was on my way down. When you go, you leave the penitentiary. If you do so many years, they put you in the lower thing, and then you go. Your security level drops, and then they send you home. Well. In there was one of the fellows that was going to get sentenced, and he had one of his maid guys there, and he said, "Gee, I would like to hear that Ralph is here. I never met him." I said, "I'd like to." So he came out. They let him come out after dinner, and he sat in his friend's cell, and I went there, and we had some Entenmann's chocolate donuts, a coffee, and we were talking. I said, listen, I know you're going to go to MCC in New York to get sentenced. I'm sorry, but you're going to, yeah, but, well, what am I going to do? Everybody else is, I got to do it. I said, you'll see John. John's there. Ask him who sent John Stanford to Philadelphia to be the boss. I want to know. I said, because a lot of people are getting killed there, and a lot of people are going to get killed. I'm going to find out. Well, 2 weeks later, the kid who went to the visit came back and told and sent word, and he came in to see his Uncle Vinny. And Vinny then came back, called me, and I went down. He said, when John was asked, who sent John Stanford there? You know how he answered? I said, how? He said, who knows him? He denied knowing him. Now, John Gotti could say 10 different things and make you believe him. So this is what happened. This is about things that I have in my mind, in my head right now. And just like Nicky Scarpo, how he had them killed, his best friend's son, because he was too popular. He was becoming very popular. He was a real gangster, too, that kid.
This is Salvi?
Nice young man.
Salvi?
You know, he was written up in the Wall Street Journal before, of course, he got killed, that he was the Prince of Philadelphia, and he, heir apparent, and that burned. That set the that was the last thing Nicky Scarpa had to hear, that little weasel.
You describe it. Salvi is the son of the former, he's the guy who, the mob boss who was, the boss of the family who was killed, and he went about right. seeking revenge for anybody who was involved, and he killed a bunch of people.
And he did. And that's another story. That's, you know, just like you said to Dan. Dan, you've got so much. I think a TV series, well, that'd take a series, a couple days, about how he arranged to have him killed. And what a tall, handsome kid. Everything, he had everything for a mafia boss.
Ralph, let me ask you this. We're going to go to the phones in a bit, but I wanted to touch on Jimmy Hoffa. You have a section of the book. You knew Hoffa well, and you describe a meeting that you had with him before he was killed, at which you know he's a dead man walking.
Oh, I knew. First of all, the man, one of the men, that they say allegedly, that was in the car. It was him, his brother, and what the hell's his name? Damn, what's that
Chucky?
Guy's last name?
Chucky?
Sal
Bruglia. No, not Danny. Danny, yeah. LaBruce. He did the shooting, but the other man who was in, it was in a photo of mine in the book, and his name was Tommy Andretti. Him and his brother were in the car with the other guy who did the shooting. They killed the other guy a few months later because he was getting too loudmouthed, and he did this, he did that. They killed him in New York, right in Manhattan, in Liberty section. And the other guys escaped. One guy went to Vegas, and the other guys, they got out of Dodge, and they let them alone, but the other guy got killed.
Yeah, Tommy Andretti lives here now. He's still alive here now. Have you ever heard the story about Frank the Irishman Sheeran?
Oh, my God. That's another one. He said, you know, I don't like to denigrate anybody, but once he's gone, he said, he's dead. He was a big guy, an ex-fighter, with the Teamsters in Delaware. And he used to come down to see Skinny Razor 3 or 4 times a week when he wasn't the head of the Delaware Teamsters. And then there was an opening, and he asked Skinny, could you get me that job? It'd be my lifetime job. Well, Skinny, all he had to do was call Jimmy, and Jimmy graciously said, yeah, sure, he's a good man. Why not? That's him. He drank every day, and he was always drunk at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. He quit. He wouldn't shoot on 4th of July. Now, who's going to deny him? He was half. Every time you talked to him, you couldn't make him out what he was saying. Well, he didn't kill Jimmy. The three guys I named, they killed him. They killed him as soon as he stepped into the car, and that was it. And Jimmy Hoffa, before all of this, he came into the Cherry Hill area and called a friend of his, the head of the Teamsters there. Call Ralphie. Tell him I would like to see him. I want to talk to him. I don't want to get on the phone myself. Okay, good. He called and he said, his name was John Greeley. He said, "Ralph," he said, "yeah, your man's in town. He'd like to see you." I said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, good. Is he with his wife?" He said, "Yeah, yeah, she's here too." "Okay, good. Where? Tell him to meet me at the, only where he's staying, at the rickshaw on Route 70, right across from the old racetrack." I said, "Okay. Tell him I'll be there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Meet him at the bar." He said, "Okay, good. I'll be with him." Good. Well, I would never turn him down when to go see him. I came in there. I had two friends of mine. They always were. They're part of my crew. Mike Marone and Ronnie Turchi. Both are dead today. And they were very dangerous guys. I said, "Sit in the lobby. Just watch and see what's going on. That's all. I'm going to go see Jimmy." And "Okay, good. Okay." I went in. He saw me walking. Wasn't that crowded that afternoon. He got up from his stool, walked right to me. We hugged. "This, hi, Ralph, how you doing?" I said, "Going, how you look good, Jim. Did Lewisburg did you good?" He started laughing. "Yeah, yeah, this." I said, "What's up?" The other guy who was with him, John Greeley, said, "Listen, I got to make a call." He knew better than to listen to the conversation. He told me, "Ralph, I came to see you. I need help in Jersey. I'm going to take the union back." I knew he was going to say it because it was all around. But I said, "You're going to take the union?" "Yes, I'm going to run. I'm going to come into the convention, this, that." I looked at him, he said, "And I need your help with a couple guys here." He knew my expertise. When I went to see somebody and told him something, it was done when I was on the street. I said, "Well, Jimmy, I'm going to tell you one thing. A man can't serve two masters." He started laughing. He said, "I knew you would say that." I said, "You know, I've been with the people I'm with now since I was a boy. And I'm with Ange." "Yes, I know. Okay. I'm going to go tell him you asked me to help you. And if he says, listen, I wash my hands of this, I'll help you. But if he doesn't, I'm going to get back to you. I'll send word. I'm not going to do it." He looked at me and said, "Well, I knew you would say that, but I appreciate you telling me. I will let you know." I could have smelled that. I wrote it down then, that the dirt, the damp dirt up in the grave when I looked at him. I was talking to a dead man. I said, "Jimmy, you have to do this. Do you really?" He said, "Ralph, I got nothing else. I have the union." When he meant nothing else, he wasn't a womanizer. He wasn't a gambler. He wasn't a drinker. He was union. He said, "That's the only thing I got." I said, "Well, I wish you well, and I'll get back to you." We hugged. We kissed. On the cheek, he kissed me. And I said, "You stay well." I walked out of there. I never had a feeling like that. I had a feeling like something dropped out of my stomach. Because I liked Jimmy. And Jimmy was all man. He was all man. He was a great union guy. But he was stubborn. And he couldn't see from here. Couldn't see in front of himself at that time.
All right. We're talking with Ralph Natale and Dan Pearson about Last Don Standing, their book. Frank Sinatra takes us into the break. We'll be right back and go to the phones with your questions and calls and comments. Some Jersey boys who made good. That's the Four Seasons from back there in Ralph Natale territory. That was a number one hit back in 1963, Walk Like a Man. The book is called Last Don Standing. It has an air of authenticity to it, unlike some mob books. Ralph Natale, in my opinion, is the real deal, and the book is highly entertaining, co-written by Larry McShane and Dan Pearson, and Dan is here with us tonight. When we come back, we'll go to the phone lines with your calls and questions and comments for Ralph Natale. Stick around. We'll go to the phones in just a moment. One other question for Ralph. Ralph, you described these events in great detail. Most of the people, in fact, maybe all of the people, except for you, who are described in the book, are dead. Is there anyone looking for you? Do you have to look in the rearview mirror when you get up in the morning?
Well, Mr. Knapp, if I have to turn and look in the rear view mirror when I get up in the morning or in the afternoon or be concerned, I would kill myself. I don't have that inside of me. I'm not. Anyone who knows me knows the answer to that question that you asked me. I wouldn't give a damn for nothing or any. I didn't take this step. I didn't become what I became because I have to turn around and look and see what's going to happen. Even when I was on the street, when I wasn't a witness or whatever, people, they wanted to kill me. They said when I was young, I wouldn't reach 20 years old. Well, I'm here. I'm 82 years old. I appreciate it. I'm there. I love it. I love living. I love my family. And I love doing what I'm doing to those punks. I want everybody to know what they are. They can't hide behind any curtains now.
Is there anything left of the Philadelphia family?
Well, I say there is no family there. The men from Scarfo's men who followed him and he was buried were all good men. They did their time, all good men, and I honor them because they all came home, did 20, 25, 30, they did time. They asked me, one of the news writers or broadcasters asked me, who do you think should be the new boss? I said, the boss should be Joe Ciccolini. Joe is a year older than me, and he was from us, from the older people. He worked for Frank Sindone. And that's about as all I know about them there. As far as they're concerned, the guys that were with me, I don't give two damn for them. The other guys, I honor them. I hope they do. Maybe they can build a family. I don't know. I'll leave it up to Joe.
Okay. We're going to go west of the Rockies. Jim in Washington has a question. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, I got three quick questions, if I may. What was Johnny Roselli and Sam Giancana's link to the JFK assassination? And secondly, what was Oswald's link to the mob? And thirdly, are the baseball, football games fixed today? Thank you.
All right. Well, that's a lot to chew on. Ralph, do you have any,
okay.
Did you ever hear any?
I can answer real fast.
Yeah.
First of all, nothing's fixed today. It's too much money involved. The players are making too much. I don't know what happened before I came around, but there's no fixing as far as sports today. Fighting, you can't do that either. Everybody making money. Even the bums are making money. The second question was, let me see, what was it?
He wants to ask about, is there a mob connection to JFK and Oswald?
Not that I know.
No, never heard Sam Giancana involved in any of that? No? Roselli?
No.
Did you know the Vegas guys, Johnny Roselli, Tony Spilotro?
Yes, of course I did. Tony Spilotro and I became good friends when I was running the union, even when I had a local 170 and came to New Jersey. We became good friends because we both worked and ran different unions and different for different people. And Tony was a great little guy. He was a great little guy.
I guess it depends on your perspective. I knew Tony Spilotro and I always got along with him, but he was a fearsome character here in Las Vegas.
He would never bother a news person. Man doing his job is never supposed to be bothered. You're doing your job. Why should anyone bother you?
Right. Wild card line, Joe in the Bronx. Hi, Joe.
How you doing, Judge?
All right.
Hi. I wanted to ask Ralph, now as far as Frank Sinatra goes, exactly what influence did he have over, say, having one of his associates or a hitman take care of something for him?
Well, I can answer this here. Frank Sinatra was the greatest singer that was ever lived, entertainer. But he carried on what people thought of him, the way he talked and when he did it. He couldn't get nobody to kill anybody. Frank Sinatra had a snotty way about him. He was this, he was that. He couldn't do it. Everybody, he'll do this. People like to build a character for people. They want to magnify things. And he couldn't do anything.
Chances are Sinatra wanted to build that image, so people feared him then.
Well, of course, that's what I meant. That's what was him. And people around him, well, yeah. A man can only do with things to weak men or weak people. Or want to hear. Frank Sinatra was the greatest entertainer maybe of all time, and the greatest singer of all time, popular singer. But he couldn't do that. It's simple. Anything else?
First time caller, Bill in Virginia. You're on with Ralph Natale and Dan Pearson.
Yeah, Ralph. Some years ago, back in the early 60s, I was living in Atlantic City, and there was a reported robbery in somewhere around the Philadelphia area, one of the Mafia Dons, I believe. And the guy denied that he was ever robbed. But some weeks after he was robbed, they were finding bodies floating up in the Atlantic Ocean every week. Do you remember anything about that? Around 60, 61 or 62.
I really don't know anything about that there. That's a big, I'll answer. I don't know you, and I'm thanks for calling. I don't know anything about it. I don't say anything. I only speak about what I'm sure about and what I did. And I never heard anyone say anybody did anything in Philly.
Ralph, let me ask you, the latter part of your book, it talks about you as boss, and you restore a certain amount of respect for the Philadelphia family, sort of get it back on solid footing. And yet, it was infiltrated by rats. You were under constant surveillance. It sounds like a job that maybe nobody would want to take.
Well, first of all, everybody wants to be a boss. The guy that sells you the pretzels on the street wants to be a boss. Anybody that denies all I want is a liar. Second of all, you can't avoid having rats and somebody talking, somebody screaming, somebody setting somebody up. You can't avoid that. The only reason I became a witness is because those punks did not bring an envelope to my wife and family like they pledged, and I made them wealthy men. For 45 months, wealthy men. When I came home from prison, they were driving somebody else's car, and they were living in their mother's home. When I left, when they picked me up and put me in prison again, they were driving BMWs, Mercedes, and they all bought homes. And they can't deny it. And that's the truth.
Dan, we haven't heard from you in a while. When you do you go out in public with Ralph? Is he the same character in person that he is on the radio here?
Well, let me say this. There is no difference when you talk to Ralph, when you're around Ralph. When you're around Ralph, there's a certain air, a certain aura. You know who you're dealing with. And what you see is what you get. Period.
Thanks.
I mean, there's no. It's just plain and simple. He is who he is. I may not agree with what he's done at this and the other, but I respect the man for who he is. And, he's never lied to us. I mean, the book has been vetted by the FBI. Ralph has been vetted by the FBI.
What do you mean the book has been vetted by the FBI? They sort of went through it?
They read the book. They know the book. They were interviewed, the whole shebang.
Go ahead.
About this is, when you talk to Ralph, the same answer you have, the same question you ask him on Monday, you ask him a month later, mm-hmm. He gives you the same answer.
I never knew that. Yeah.
You know, so we looked, we tried to, we did our best to trip him up. We never tripped him up. He is who he is.
Do you stay in contact with the FBI, Ralph, or do they keep tabs on you? Or do you, are you saying that they had to sort of approve what you release in this? Because it might affect future prosecutions or something?
We had our own sources. Yeah. We had our own sources. And through that, with Larry McShane, we were able to, get these things ascertained and so on and so forth.
Sure. Ralph, are you going to add to that about the FBI?
Well, the FBI... of course, I'll put this here. The Senate Investigating Committee and the FBI and the people who really are big in Washington, D.C., took me out of Bloomsburg and brought me in. They wanted to ask me the questions about major people in this country. And I didn't give them the answers they wanted. So if they called me and wouldn't send me home, they authenticated who I was and what I did, and they made me pay for it. I was supposed to only do 52 to 80 months on anything. That was my on the programs that the Bureau of Prisons had. I did 16 flat on the first one. 16 years, not months, for nothing. For nothing. No murders, no nothing. Of course, I was a killer when I went in and did everything way before. But I was totally charged with what I was charged with. And that's what happened. That's the only way I can answer that.
You know, in organized crime, the mafia isn't what it used to be. Of course, it's much diminished from its golden era. It's right. The zenith of its power. But there are other organized crime organizations that have moved in Las Vegas, in New York, I'm sure in Philadelphia, street gangs and things right. of that are violent, that don't have any kind of the same kind of code as some right. guys, like the stand-up guys like you did. Your thoughts on that? It's a vacuum. It's like a power vacuum.
My thoughts are on this here. I talked with some of the people from these different, the Russians, the street gangs, the bikers, and most of all, I had the Black Mafia, the younger ones of the Black Mafia in Philadelphia, come and visit me in my penthouse when I first came home. Six of them came up. They brought a beautiful present, a robe of all colors. They came up respectful. They asked to come up, and I said, yes, you can. And their fathers and uncles were with me in Lewisburg, and we grew up together on the street when I was young, and they were young. So the respect that they said, and they said, Ralph, whatever you want us to do, we'll do. I said, no, I appreciate that. Go out and make a lot of money. If I can help you, this and that, you got it. But I'm okay right now. If I do, don't worry. It's not below me to call and help. But so far, and they loved it. We shook hands, and they always sent somebody up the racetrack to check and make sure everything was okay. And when I was in Lewisburg, the Black Mafia, they supported me 100%. That's what happened. That's what happens when you do what you're supposed to do.
Ralph, or maybe Dan, do you have book signings in the works? Because one of our listeners had mentioned, I guess that'd be tough for you to do.
It's tough for me, but yeah,
what if somebody wants an autograph, an autographed copy of the book? Can they get one?
They
can.
They can send it, and they'll get it autographed. But I can't sit there and watch and some screwball come up. I'm the guy that killed Ralph Natale. If I'm going to get killed,
well, I
want to have
figured
a shot
that was the answer.
To do something about it, and then I can go. But I'm not going to sit there like some fool and sign some. Oh yeah, it's it. It's
yeah.
not me. I'm not going to go that way. I'm going to go. I like to go with my shoes on and ready to do something.
We'll try to take one more call. First-time caller, Jimmy in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Jimmy. You're on with Ralph Natale and Dan Pearson.
Hey, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Ralph, I was involved with the Roofers Union, and I wanted to know if you knew anything about the killing of John McCullough, the president of our union.
Yeah. Well, I want to tell you something. If you were involved, you understand, he was one of my best friends when I was on the street. When they killed him, I sent word that when I come home, I don't care if I'm 100, I'm going to settle it. Anybody that's left, I'm going to kill. And you could check that with everybody. I was the only, me and my friend, Frankie Vedino, a dear friend and my driver and everything, a great guy. we're the only two Italians used to go up to the St. Paddy's Day that John used to throw in the Union Hall. You're familiar with that?
When he I spent a lot of time up in Montgomery County at the Boys Club up there.
Oh, okay.
I was friends with him.
And some of his Goonie Walsh, Joey Crosley, they, when I came home, they gave me a keychain with his face stamped on it. That's how close I was to him. And me and my wife used to go out with him and his wife quite often for dinner when I was home, when I was on the street, and he was the strongest thing ever for the building trades ever. Since he's gone, it's not the same.
He was a great guy. We all loved him.
A great Union man, and what a Marine he was.
So, I still got the hat with the little the bulldog on it with the helmet.
Okay. That's
all right. John McCullough.
Thanks for calling.
I don't think we have time for any more calls, but I see that Tracy, who's a trucker in Arkansas, was asking about any movies based on Ralph or stories about him. You're not a character in any movie so far, but maybe you'll be one if they make this into a series, right?
It will be based on Ralph and based on the book.
And Ralph, do you think you might write another one? You made a reference earlier to the possibility of enough material for another book.
Yes. I have enough for another two books, but I would like to say this here. I got enough to join this one that you read, and I'm glad you read it. I know you read it because of the way you answered me your questions. I appreciate being on your program, and I'll have to tell you one thing. When I hear the radio, it reminds me when I had a radio in Lewisburg, and I used to turn it on in the middle of the night and listen to all the from Chicago, all the stations, and from out west. It was great. And again, I want to thank you for being so kind to my friend Dan. And anything I could do to help you in any way, I will do it.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you make it out this way to Las Vegas, please let me know, and maybe we can get together or something. And The Secret Life of Mob Boss Ralph Natale.
It will be my pleasure.
All right. Last Don Standing is the name of the book. Larry McShane and Dan Pearson co-wrote it. Thanks, Ralph. Appreciate you being here. Thanks also to my earlier guest, Mark Gorton, and to my colleagues there at Coast, Nathan Staten and Donna Walker, our webmaster tonight, Lex Lonehood, Dan Galani, and the producer, Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. I'll be back next Sunday. Good night, everyone.